The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, I've got a special bonus for you. It's called 10 More Minutes with John Zmirak. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Eric. We talked a little bit about this last week, but I'd love to talk about it again. Is the woke cult just a spastic reaction to Darwinism? And that's kind of a clunky long title, but I kind of had to put it that way. The woke cult, which you and I are experiencing, which you and I are afflicted by, it's hysterical, it's moralistic, it's constantly looking for people that for new rights that people have, new sensitivities we have to respect, new restrictions on our behavior that we have to do in order to avoid offending vulnerable, marginalized people. The woke cult, which is promoting all that, also believes that you and I are cosmic accidents, brain farts of the universe. We are the result of random genetic mutations and then the survival of the fittest. That's Darwinian materialism. How does Darwinian materialism produce all these snowflakes? Who are you supposed to protect and supposed to look out for? Do you see chimpanzees being careful not to misgender each other? Do you see gorillas looking out for the vulnerable and making sure they, and look, all the males need to get a chance to mate. We're not going to hog all the females.
That's very funny. Do you see gorillas looking out for the vulnerable? John, that should be the title of a book. Can't you write short books with titles like that? I know you could. You need to do that. That's just too good. Sorry.
Oh, I want people who think it's wrong for us to eat animals to extend that to the animal world. I want them to go out in the forest and try to convince the bears to be vegetarian. I want them to have a nice sit down with the lions and the tigers and explain to them that it is speciesist for them to eat antelopes and wildebeest. And look, if you can convince us of that, since we're no different from other animals, right? We have no more rights, no more claims than other animals, then vegetarianism is something that should be evangelized to the animal world, to the predators out there. And I would love to see our woke friends out there talking to the lions, talking to the bears. I think it would produce a winnowing process in society. It would cull our herd very effectively, and the world would be a better place afterwards.
Wouldn't it be great if the woke people were eaten by bears, but they would sacrifice themselves for the virtuous idea of dying in a beautiful cause, of preaching vegetarian to these 2,000-pound strong monsters that want to eat them. John, I think we've gone truly crazy.
I tried to write a book about this. It was called To Serve Man, and it was a cookbook on how to eat vegetarians. And my agent looked at the manuscript, slid it back across the table to me and said, never tell anyone about this, not even your closest, most trusted friends.
Did you really do this?
Yeah, it was a guide. My theory was, if vegetarians think animals and people are of equal moral value, we should do a compromise with them, that instead of eating other animals, we would eat the vegetarians. That would save animals. It would let these people act on their conscience. It would let us act on our conscience. So I had recipes.
Now, you have a bad publisher. You should find another publisher. I wish somebody would give me the money. I'm not kidding. To do a publishing imprint, because there's so many things that I would publish, and I think that they would do well, actually. I'm not saying I would just do this as a vanity project. I actually think that a lot of publishers don't have good instincts and they don't know how to make the business work, because there are things like what you're talking about. You could do it sarcastically, or you could actually write essays, as you do, explaining this. People need to understand how ideas work, and a lot of people don't, and it's why we get this crazy world we live in that you're describing, that people are, they're woke, but they don't understand, which is what you and I keep talking about, they don't understand that you cannot have these strong values if we got here by genetic mutations and accidents over the course of billions of years. It doesn't follow.
Right. They don't understand that. The politicians who really understood Darwin and applied him were Stalin and Hitler. They took they had different takes on how evolution works. Hitler thought it was racial groups. Stalin thought it was class groups. Marx was very influenced by Darwin. The politicians of the 20th century who applied Darwin consistently were Stalin and Hitler. And in the United States, Margaret Sanger, who managed to get laws passed in 13 states forcibly sterilizing people who didn't pass culturally biased IQ tests. Darwinism was a scientific mistake. And if you follow the Discovery Institute and you see books like The Return of the God Hypothesis and Darwin's Doubt and other books that the Discovery Institute puts out, you'll find there is no way to explain the emergence of life on this planet by sheer chance. There's no way to explain the development of all the animals that came about in the Cambrian explosion. And there's certainly no way to explain the existence of man with a consciousness that is capable of doing objective science and writing books like The Origin of Species. None of these things can be explained by random chance and natural selection.
Okay,
that is the great myth of our day.
And what's ironic, and I'm writing about this in my book that's coming out in October, it's called Is Atheism Dead? I write about this, that the more we learn from science, the more we know that we didn't get here by that method. In other words,
that's
we
right.
could have said in 1859, we think this is how it happened. In 1925, we could have said, we think this is how it happened. In 2021, we can no longer logically maintain this.
Right. Darwin thought cells were like homogeneous gobs of goo. And that
jelly donuts on a microscopic level.
Exactly. He had no idea. It's not his fault. They didn't have the kind of microscopes they needed. They had no idea that the smallest bacterium is infinitely more complicated than the computers that run the space shuttle. The smallest creature on this earth is infinitely more complex than all the contents of the Library of Congress put together. That's how much information it took to put together the smallest bacterium. That doesn't happen by accident. You don't take all the letters of the alphabet, drop them on the floor, and it spells out two lines of a Shakespeare poem. But the odds of that happening, of Shakespeare coming out of a bag of Scrabble, are infinitely higher than the odds that the tiniest cell came into existence by accident. You might not like
now,
the idea.
Now, where did you get that information? Where did you get that information from? Is it from Stephen Meyer's book, The God Hypothesis?
It's actually from his previous book, The Signature in the Cell. But both of them have it. What Meyer has done is study the role of information, information in the creation of life. And once we learned that the genetic code is a code, like computer code, like instructions for building an airplane. Imagine you, some archaeologist in 100 years, no, say, five, yeah, if the woke people have their way, in 100 years, after a Mad Max collapse of civilization, imagine if an archaeologist of the future comes across the operating manual for a Boeing 707. And he says, it is fascinating to see how the qualities of the paper and the ink created this elaborate thing with all these apparent letters. And it makes more – Sonny Bono once joked that Cher thought Mount Rushmore was a natural formation. That is Darwinian materialism. It's looking at Mount Rushmore and trying to figure out how the wind and erosion patterns happen to create the faces on the mountain that somehow, oddly, remind us of American presidents. But that's just our creationist bias. We need to overcome our creationist bias, and science will tell us that Mount Rushmore was formed by the wind and erosion.
That's what Richard Dawkins says, that these things have the appearance of design, but don't be fooled. There's no design. It just happened. John, we're just about out of time. I want to say to people again, folks, you have a standing homework assignment in this class. And yes, this is a class. You need to go to stream.org, stream.org. And spelling counts. If you don't spell stream correctly, you're not going to get there. Stream.org. Look up John Zmirak, spelling also counts, Z-M-I-R-A-K. Find his articles, print them out, scatter them around the neighborhood, put them on the island in the middle of the kitchen so that the kids will stumble on them. Fascinating stuff. John, my friend, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric. God bless.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I've found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. You may remember I had some wonderful conversations with the author of a book that I raved about called Campus Land, a brilliant, funny novel about the woke madness at a place exactly like Yale. If you read Campus Land, you will recognize Yale. If you know Yale, you'll see. And Campus Land, unfortunately, is very real. It's very true. The author, Scott Johnson, my fellow Yale alumnus, is with us. Scott, welcome back.
Hi, Eric. Great to be here again.
It's not that great, because what we're talking about is incredibly sick and depressing. But you're right. It's fun to talk about it with people who know that it's sick and depressing. You have been talking about what's going on in private schools here in Manhattan. You are friends with an Azra Namani. I don't know if she's going to be on the program today, but I said, I've got to get you on just to talk about what is happening.
Well, I sort of ended up in this by accident. I wrote the book that was about college woke culture, and all these latest controversies are about private schools, specifically in New York, but really it's happening everywhere. I was contacted by someone I know on the inside of one of these schools in December, Dalton being the school in particular, with some of the crazy, absolutely insane demands that the teachers were making. The 50% of all donations to Dalton, a private school, should go to the New York City public school system, that they should hire 12 full-time diversity officers. There's 8 pages of this sort of stuff.
Diversity officers. That makes me want to blow my brains out. The idea of that, I mean, this is full-on cultural Marxism. It's madness. But I mean, you write about it in Campus Land brilliantly, but it's hard for me, because I go out of my way to avoid this madness, to think that this is really happening at private schools all over the country, but particularly in the woke capital of Manhattan.
Well, someone someone, I ended up writing an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal about it. And there were 600 or 700 comments below it in the digital version. And one of them was a line that was so good that, you know, as an author, I wish I'd written it myself. Whoever it was, and posted it anonymously, said, you know, we've reached peak bourgeois decadence when our ruling class will pay top dollar to learn how to hate themselves.
I mean, but it follows logically. That's what's so creepy about it, is it does follow logically, because what we're talking about is a kind of self-hating. It's a guilt, right? I mean, if listen, I'm a Christian, so I say I am a sinner. I know it. The way I escape guilt, which is just crushing and leads to nothing but destruction, is I have God who forgives me, and then I can have the joy of forgiveness. If you don't believe that, then you will labor under this crushing guilt. You don't know where to go with it, and it sort of erupts and manifests itself in preposterous things like what's going on at schools like Dalton.
Well, you wrote so well about Martin Luther, and his primary complaint was the issue with the selling of indulgences by the Catholic Church. Well, we have a modern version of indulgence buying in the form of the diversity, equity, and inclusion industry. And it is an industry now. And all these progressive parents and progressive schools want to wash away the sins of our ancestors, basically, by bringing on these DEI consultants and paying them a very hefty sum to tell them how awful they are and how they have to change the way they're doing everything. You know, really what's happened, people are just waking up to this. There's been something called the Long March through our institutions that's been going on for decades.
By the way, do you know who said that? Is somebody very famous said that, and I can never remember who it was. None of us can.
Might have been Antonio Gramsci.
But you know what? That's the architect of cultural Marxism. I think that's right.
And this, you're seeing it come to fruition, and it happened so suddenly and burst on the scene, first because of George Floyd, and then because COVID was an enormous distraction. So all this stuff was implemented by these schools in particular over the summer, and parents came back to find it implemented in their schools in September without any input from them. And so you have things like Dalton putting on a play where one of the roles is racist cop one, and then there's a racist cop two. And you have basic math being challenged now because correct answers are considered a social construct. And we can't have social constructs because it was white people doing the constructing.
We need to have this debate. I mean, it's actually fascinating that things are out in the open now, because I, for years, said that eventually, you know, it's going to be 2 + 2 = 5. That's in George Orwell's 1984, the idea that there is no truth. And I would really would challenge the people at Yale or Dalton or all these places that where do you get truth from? They will stammer because they don't really have an answer. I was just talking to John Zmirak about this. They have kind of borrowed truth and they've carried it out to its logical extension. And then they realize, well, we don't know where this comes from. So we're going to go by our feelings now.
Well, what you have now is a weird marriage of deconstructionism, which we inherited from a bunch of awful, mostly French philosophers. You know, there was Foucault and
Jacques Derrida.
Derrida. Listen, yeah, that was the name.
He came to Yale. He came to Calhoun College. He didn't come to your residential college, punk. He came to Calhoun College. And I had the privilege of holding an umbrella over his head as we walked through the courtyard. And I thought, this is like I'm escorting the zeitgeist across the Calhoun courtyard, because these were the people who destroyed the West. I mean, we're living with it now.
You're right. It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine from my class who was a philosophy major. So he graduated in the early 80s. And he said that in philosophy at Yale in the late 70s, early 80s, they read Derrida and others, but deconstructionism was regarded as a sideshow, like this funny little thing over there that, you know, we'll read some. He said it was unreadable. And then
that's always the key, right? It's got to be unreadable because right. It made sense. And, you know, yeah.
Yep. They control the language and it's impenetrable. But this particular guy then went to China for a number of years and sort of fell very much out of touch with what was happening culturally in the U.S. And when he came back, he was shocked to discover that deconstructionism had had marched through every philosophy major and English major and departments. He thought it was just kind of a joke. But so anyway, where I was going is this is sort of a weird marriage of racial politics and deconstructionism that's happening right now. And the two things are leveraging off each other. And the results are horrifying. And parents are just starting to figure this out.
Well, I have to say, you know, I've been kind of onto this for some time because I remember, I mean, it's really when I had my Christian conversion 4 years out of Yale and the scales fell from my eyes and I started noticing things. And I thought, my goodness, the people who are giving money to Yale don't really understand what they're feeding. They think it's, you know, raccoon coats, go Yale, like it's 1920 or something. Things have moved on. Yale was fully woke when I was there. In the, I'm trying to think, you're 83 or 84, 85. I can't remember.
82.
I mean, it was there when we were there and it has just completely taken over. But, you know, when you go to a football game, you don't see it because the really woke people don't go to football games. I mean, I was part of a group that was like, we didn't go to the football games because that's bourgeois. You know, we're going to go and we're going to make art or some preposterous thing. It has taken over and people continue to give their money to it. And they continue to say, well, Yale is great and Dalton is great and Brearley is great and all these schools are great. And while they have been, you know, playing the fiddle, all of these things that they thought they knew were there have burned. They're gone.
It's funny. I have a lot of fun with exactly what you're talking about in campus land. The notion that the university will set up this Potemkin village for important alums when they come back and visit and have fun, boozy reunions, which are after the students leave. So the students are safely out of the way from the view of any alum.
This is true. I was there when the reunions are right after everybody leaves and it's like another world. You don't see the woke madness. This was in the 80s, Scott. And of course they know that they would lose a lot of money. They have lost money from alumni who see what's happening.
I'm told, and this is at least a year out of date, that the number of alums giving has dropped 40% in recent years. They still make up for it with the occasional nine-figure donor.
Yeah.
One of those is Charles Johnson, who gave the money for the two new colleges, and he's quite conservative. I don't think he's writing any more checks. Anytime I give a talk, a campus land talk or anything, and I'm in front of a group of people, I urge them to stop writing checks.
I can't tell you. I mean, this drives me crazy. When we come back, we're going to bring on your friend. Is it Azra? What's the name?
Azra Namani.
Namani. And what does she do? She's written for the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, she's a former journal writer, and she started a group online called defendinged.org
defendingeducation.org.
Yes.
defendinged.org. Azra Namani will be joining us. We're talking to Scott Johnson, the author of Campus Land, an amazing comic novel. We'll be right back. Prescription Dispensing Labs is a national licensed pharmacy specializing in personalized prescription and natural medicine. The pharmacists at PD Labs are credited with formulating unique nasal sprays for the dreaded brain fog and a leader in uncovering new compounds to improve your health. PD Labs is one of the first pharmacies to now offer a telemedicine group trained in prevention medicine and how to restore your health. They have developed signature professional supplements that really work rather than just promotional advertising. PD Labs Pharmacy prides itself on innovation and amazing customer service that show dedication to your health. Today, everyone needs a choice in their health care, and they bring many refreshing options on how to maximize your body's amazing capabilities to bounce back. PD Labs has an extensive network of practitioners nationwide dedicated to true health care, not sick care. Visit their website, pdlabsrx.com, for free health tips, podcasts, and their popular online store. Call 888-909-0110. Ask for Ray and tell them Eric sent you. That's 888-909-0110.
Snow, cement.
Folks, welcome back. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. I've been talking to Scott Johnson, a friend and the author of Campus Land, a brilliant comic novel about the woke madness at Yale. But unfortunately, this has now gone on to reach private schools all across Manhattan and all the elite suburbs around America. So we have on Azra Namani, has written a lot for the Wall Street Journal and has started something called defendinged.org. Azra, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much. And nobody is immune from the scourge of this new toxicity.
Well, listen, though, I've noticed this. I mean, my daughter went to Marymount, which is a little bit less guilty of this, but I still was astonished to see the idiocy and to see really what it is. I mean, I've seen this with parents from, you know, sending the kids to Yale or whatever. People's willingness to look the other way as if they say, well, this is how it's done now. And it doesn't make sense to me, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to cause trouble. I don't want people to look at me like I'm odd. So I'll just go along with it. And it's because of that, that we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel like, you know, having been a reporter at the Wall Street Journal for 15 years, one of my favorite assignments was to cover marketing, because marketing is sort of like propaganda, right? And so what we have now from my, you know, lens is that you've got a new propaganda that's this woke industry, and it's a new ideology of critical race theory. And it is marketing off of the brand of these institutions. So they are benefiting from, you know, hundreds of years of all of these institutions and the, you know, T-shirts and the websites now and the, you know, the supposed like bump to your income that you're going to get from going to these schools. And so people look the other way because they don't want to undermine their own children's futures or their own status in the community.
Yeah, exactly. And it's horrifying. I mean, I hate to go there, but because I wrote a book on Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the Nazi era, it's we kid ourselves when we act as though, oh, I would have been on the right side of history then. Oh, I'm not for killing Jews in the millions. No, 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 no. I would have been on the right side of history. Well, the fact is, similar things are happening now because they weren't killing Jews en masse in 1933, 34 and 35. But it just requires enough respectable people to say nothing and to let, you know, the totalitarians take power, people who right. do not share your values. But because you don't want someone to look at you funny, you don't want to lose a job or whatever it is. And that is very powerful in elite culture in America, certainly in Manhattan.
Yeah. I mean, I was just over the weekend walking the streets of Cambridge and I looked at the spot where Alexander Graham Bell had had some inventions and also others. And I thought to myself back, and these were all from, and then some of it was from the 1920s. And I remembered, and I told the young kids that were with me, you know, it was in the 1920s as the Jewish kids were succeeding at these Ivy League institutions that they had decided that this was an alien force that needed to be removed. And they started the discrimination against Jewish kids. And one of the young ones with me said, yeah, and that was even before World War II, right? So this is the same dynamic that's happening today. I was born in India, came to this country without a word of English, and this country allowed my family and me to move forward. And that is exactly what education provides. It's the great equalizer and it's the great progressive movement for all people. And so it's such a tragedy today. You know, and every single day we've got this portal at Parents Defending Education, this new organization that I've helped start. We're getting reports every single day. And it's so disturbing from public schools in Kansas, Missouri, California, Virginia, private schools in Massachusetts, Atlanta, New York. I mean, folks are losing their minds because they don't know what to do. And they can see that there's a new toxic, you know, intensity that's happening to take over their kids' minds and hearts. And it's really disturbing.
Well, what can we do? I mean, first of all, if people go to defendinged.org, what's there?
So what we have there is a map. I'm really proud of this map because I'm a visual person and I need to see the geography of this toxicity that has now gone into so many of our schools and school systems. And when you go to your map, you can see from whatever state you're in, reports that parents and teachers and community members have sent to us. We're vetting them. We're getting dozens every single day. And on that map also, you can find parent groups with which you can align yourself to fight back. We've got resource guides. We've got a tip sheet on how to file a Freedom of Information Act request with the public school systems, guides on how to speak about critical race theory. And you know, the best thing that we can do, I think, like you and I know, who knows how we can defeat this and win our schools back. But what we know is a winnable goal is to expose all of this. Like, that's the journalist in me. Like, I know that if we set off a goal to just let people know what's happening, we can win that. So just know as parents that if you expose things, like, we'll protect your anonymity and others will know the truth of what you're dealing with.
This is all so important. Now, how do you and Scott know each other? Scott, can you tell us? I'm always curious how like-minded people find each other.
Well, since I started reporting on this stuff on The Naked Dollar, my blog, I've met a lot of people who are forming the counter-revolution, if you want to call it that.
Yes, I do.
Including Paul Rossi, the brave soul, the teacher at the Grace Church School, who penned a piece about how awful things have gotten there. And
actually, when we come back, I want to jump right into that. We'll be right back, folks.
But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again now. Thought I'd see you one more time again.
Folks, I'm talking to Wall Street Journal reporter Asra Nomani. Am I pronouncing that semi-correctly?
Yeah, Asra Nomani, and I'm a former Wall Street Journal reporter.
Former Wall Street Journal reporter. That's really the best kind. And I'm talking to Scott Johnson, author of Campus Land, an amazing novel, unfortunately, utterly prescient. And your website, Asra, is defendinged.org. And you just let us know, Scott, that you have a blog called The Naked Dollar. Tell us what you were just beginning to tell us before I cut you off in the last segment, Scott.
Well, after I started reporting on the various schools like Dalton and Brearley and Grace Church and the crazy things that were going on at each, the blog kind of blew up. It suddenly got 500,000 hits. And I started connecting with all the various people who were involved in the counter movement, Asra being one of them. And there's another called FAIR, which stands for Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism.
Yeah,
he's a great group. And then Paul Rossi, who's the brave teacher from Grace Church, he's the co-founder of that. Anyway, we're all working towards the same goal. And I think Asra is taking a great tack, which is to provide a resource center, basically, for people who are just trying to figure out, parents in particular, who are trying to figure out what the heck they can do.
It's vital that we figure out what we can do. I mean, look, this is absolute madness. We've tolerated it. We've looked the other way. I think there are many people who will continue to look the other way because they simply don't care. They're really they're so self-obsessed that they don't care if the nation burns down as long as their kid gets to go to Harvard or gets to whatever it is they think is going to be wonderful for their kid. But I don't know what kind of a future we have if the elite institutions are turning out kids who think this way.
Well, let me tell you the level of fear involved. Not just with parents, but the kids who, if you're conservative, you have to hide what you think all the way through school or really, really suffer for it. I spoke to a girl a couple of days ago who went to one of these schools I've reported on. I won't even say which one, who had to hide her beliefs all the way through school. And I invited her, and she described what an oppressive, awful atmosphere it was for her. I invited her to pen an anonymous piece on my blog, and she thought about it for a couple of days, and she really, really wanted to write it. She wanted to get her feelings out there about this. And in the end, she decided, she's in college now, she decided she didn't want to take the risk that somehow they'd discover who she was and they'd come after her in college. That's how scared people are.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, the really beautiful part that I've experienced over this past 9 months of just torture from this public school system where I'm a parent in Northern Virginia, is that it was June 2020, and we started off with three parents who were really worried about this new activism by our school principal. And U.S. News and World Report just ranked us today the number one high school again in America. It's called Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology. And we're mostly immigrant, 70% from Asia. And the principal told us that we had to check our, quote, privileges and reconsider the colonial mascot that is the mascot for the school. Well, we started off with just three parents, Suparna, Glenn, one more, Helen. She wrote an email to the school principal called Hopping Mad, literally that she was hopping mad. And now in the organization we've got at least 300 people who are on our Telegram channel. We have 8,000 that sign our petitions by name, because these are people who realize that you're not safe. Like, nobody is safe from this. Even if you're self-absorbed, like, they're going to come for you. Nobody is safe. And we will only become stronger if the more that people stand up with moral courage.
Well, again, I've written about this stuff, but it's very dismaying to see people who have praised my book on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, for example, themselves turn aside and say, I don't want to take this on. And I think that if we do not all together stand and speak against this, it's all over. We must unite and we must say, this is our battle. And, you know, Scott, when you talk about people are so scared, when I hear the story of that student saying, well, she's in college now, I want to talk to her privately and say, hey, shame on you. You must do this, because you, first of all, have the privilege of knowing that this is right, that this is true, and that these ideas are false. And we need people like that, respectable people, to stand up. And I actually would argue that, you know, we are on the right side of history. You didn't think when you were in Germany in the mid 30s, it was very, very difficult, very difficult. And you were risking your life, not just maybe a job. But some people did it and most people didn't. But everybody in retrospect thinks, well, I wish I had, but they didn't. We're living in a time like that right now where you're risking something, but do you want to be on the right side of history? You know, we throw that term around, but I mean it truly, the right side of history. Not the woke side of history, which is the wrong side of history. But eventually these things do sort themselves out, I hope.
I've been calling some of the brave people who have been standing up, like Rossi and Andrew Gutman, the parent from Brearley, who wrote a scathing letter about what was going on at that school. I've been calling them digital Martin Luthers, which I thought you might like.
Thank you. I don't think everybody's going to associate me with the Martin Luther biography, but we have to do that. We have to do that. And I always say to people, like, because I've written about these people, shame on me if I wouldn't be able to be willing to speak out at this point. But there's so many people that they praise these heroes, but then when their time comes, they let it go. They don't want to be the one.
And just another point. I come from a liberal Democrat life. I was a bleeding heart liberal. That's how I went into journalism. I voted Democrat all my life. And real liberals also have to consider that Martin Luther King Jr., like, his entire movement was about challenging any hierarchy of human value. And so the new ideology of critical race theory is about rejecting this old hierarchy of human value that we all know was wrong, right, that did evaluate people by the color of their skin, right, and creating a new hierarchy of human value. Right. And no hierarchy of human value is acceptable.
Listen, we're out of time, Azra, but I just want to say, let us say that we're whetting the appetite of my audience. I would love to have you and Scott back as soon as possible, because this is a larger conversation. We need to talk about critical race theory and all of this stuff. Grateful to both of you. Folks, go to defendinged.org and get a copy of Campus Land, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks so much.
everybody.
Whoa.
It's the Eric Metaxas Show with my sidekick slash producer,
yeah,
Albin Sadar.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought you were the sidekick.
No, I could be. I could play the role of sidekick. Listen, switching I'm very around. Versatile. People don't believe me. I was talking to Kevin Sorbo. He's doing these movies. I said, Kevin, give me a part. I don't care what it is. I will show you. You want to know what acting is? I will show you. Hey, you, Sorbo. Hey, Sorbo, I'm talking to you.
You could be Kevin's body double.
I
right
could
there.
Do I could do it. I'm so ripped, it's not even funny.
Don't okay. joke about those things.
Here's what we need to talk about
okay,
real quick.
Let's do it.
A couple things.
Okay.
There are still people not signed up for our newsletter.
What?
Yep. Oh. And I was talking to some friends yesterday, and they said, where do we find these videos? And I got really, you know, smoke started coming out of my ears, and I said, hey, you get my email, don't you? If you open up the email, every email, we send it out like about twice a week, sometimes more, has all the previous videos. So you're saying, when did Eric have Lou Dobbs on? Where do I find that? When did Eric have Mike Lindell on? When did Eric have Milo Yiannopoulos on?
When
did... You have to subscribe to ericmetaxas.com. That's the first announcement. The second announcement, we keep talking about people going to mypillow.com and mystore.com. My books are mostly available at mystore.com. Use the code Eric. Well, guess what?
What?
We have a new sponsor called Nutramedics.
Oh, yeah.
N-U-T-R-A. Nutramedics, M-E-D-I-X. Nutramedics.com. Nutramedics.com. You also have to use the code Eric with them. But if you use melatonin, resveratrol, stevia, which is a sweetener, vitamin C, zinc, vitamin D, like this is all the stuff, magnesium, that I take anyway, right?
The whole alphabet there.
Curcumin. They've got it all, folks. And I just want to say, if you use any of that stuff, my attitude, the reason I'm so excited about Nutramedics and I'm excited to work with them, they give 50% of all of their profits to missions. Did you hear that? 50% to missions and to similar charities. And I'm going to find out what charities. And they have a goal to give away 100 million by the end of this decade. And to put a man on the moon by the end of the 1960s. That's their goal. They've already accomplished the first one.
Yay.
And the second one.
Yes.
If you missed that, you can look it up on microfiche at the library. But they did put a man on the moon in the 60s.
Good.
Nutramedics is going to give away 100 million by the end of this decade. It said 2030, and I thought 2030, that's like 2050, right?
No.
And then I realized, oh, it's a few years away.
Yeah.
So, but you have to use the code Eric. But honestly, most of their stuff, just look them up online. You can read their story. We're going to have the founder on this program. But it's hard not for me to be excited because I think I buy all this stuff anyway from somebody. I might as well buy it from Nutramedics.com, and 50% of their profits goes to things that I believe in.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So there you go.
You can't lose. You cannot lose.
Is there anything else that we need to talk about?
Well, what I'd like to say, the weekend is here or coming up, and it's, you know, that's exciting. And did you mention that people have to... You did. Well, sign up for your newsletter.
Did I ever mention that? I don't think I've ever mentioned that. Go to ericmetaxas.com.
Use the code Eric. It's double free.
See, now when you confuse people like that, that's bad.
That is.
Ericmetaxas.com. Actually, we'll mention one thing before we go. If you go to our radio website, which is metaxastalk.com, yes, there is a banner to support voter integrity in Georgia. Everybody, all of the woke corporations, Coca-Cola, which I'll never drink again,
right,
Delta Airlines, all of these folks are lining up saying that voter integrity is racist. Actually, they are racist. I don't have time to break it down.
Yeah.
But if you don't mind, please go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the banner, and sign the petition for voter integrity in Georgia. Voter integrity is for all Americans, folks. Make no mistake. That's the point of it. All right. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, we're here for you.